Lending is a risk mitigation business. That's really what it is. What asset class do I go after to make the safest risk-adjusted return for me and my investors?
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Michael Gewirtz is an entrepreneur and investor in the real estate and finance industries. He is the CEO and founder of Bluebird Companies, a diversified real estate organization specializing in private lending, development, and construction management. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam, for having me.
Absolutely. The pleasure is mine, Michael. There are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, sure, Sam. So I started in 2005, working for a real estate investment trust here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania Real Estate Investment Trust. They specialize in enclosed malls and shopping centers. For about 5 years, I was a development director for their most of the properties in the South and part of the Mid-Atlantic region. So at that time, from 2005 through 2010, they were acquiring portfolios of malls and shopping centers, and that's when this redevelopment initiative really took place in retail, when retail started changing. So converting big, you know, anchors and big boxes to more lifestyle oriented uses, maximizing value through developing out parcels on, you know, underutilized land, things like that. So I cut my teeth and I learned the business of real estate development there, which is a great experience because it was a large company. They owned 20 million square feet of property, fully integrated in-house. And then the 08 financial crisis hit. So, and if you remember, the retail really got hit hard during that time. So from there in 2009, I decided to go off on my own. And from 2009 to about 2015, I was purchasing local properties in the neighborhoods, the emerging neighborhoods in outside Center City, Philadelphia. So in South Philadelphia, parts of North Philadelphia, a little bit in West Philadelphia. And we'd focus on this urban infill strategy where, you know, I've developed over 70 properties in that 6 year period, ranging from single family homes to sell, single family homes to rent, mixed use properties, you know, apartments above a retail use or a restaurant, something like that. And, that was really fun. And, you know, a lot of those investments, you know, we still own today. And then in 2018, I brought, you know, well, from 2015 to 2018, I was experimenting with lending. So, you know, you're out in the neighborhoods, you're meeting these contractors, other real estate investors, and the market started getting a little overheated, at least I thought at that time. So I started lending to other contractors and investors, you know, $100,000 here, $200,000 there, with some of the money that I've made in the real estate business. And then it was successful and it was working. And, you know, it was a relationship business. It wasn't actually a business. It was more of like a side investment. But then in 2018, I decided to bring all my real estate expertise and knowledge and the properties I had developed and managed and pair it with the lending business. So since 2018, we've been primarily focused on fix and flip, bridge lending, and 30-year rental products.
That is really interesting. I want to go back to a comment you made where you said you felt like the market was getting overheated. Why would that then say to you, this is a good time to become the lender? I would have thought maybe it was the other way around, where it's like, oh, the market's overheated. The last thing I want to do is be holding a note on stuff that's going to go belly up.
Well, I didn't. The risk on that, on those deals, is in the equity position.
Sure.
Right. So I'm underwriting these loans, especially, you know, at a conservative LTV. Back then it was like 50%, you know, back then it was more of like traditional hard money. Mm-hmm. And we can talk a little bit about, you know, what hard money means and things like that. So I didn't want, you know, I started buying stuff 2009, 2010. That was like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, not anything you bought went up for the next few years. Rentals, single family home prices went up. It was easy. And then around like 2015, I was like, it wasn't so easy anymore. If I was looking at different things, different way to attack it. No, I agree with you. I would not want to lend at a high LTV on an overheated market. But the way that I look at it is I take over the property if the borrower can't complete it. So, I'd rather expose $100,000, $200,000 in the debt position instead of equity at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I think that's really cool. The other thing I love about your story here is that you said you still own a lot of that portfolio that you built up from 2009 to 2015.
Yes.
I think that's
Yes.
awesome. I did a kind of a back of the napkin analysis of everything I bought from 2013 to like 2020, because I was in the fix and flip game for actually it was 2018 when I got out of the fix and flip game. But I looked at that and I'm like, I could have retired if all I did was just hold that
Well,
portfolio.
I'll tell you, it's funny you say that because the best deal I ever did on like a return basis was a package of eight single family houses in South Philadelphia that I bought in 2012. Paid $100,000 a piece for them. They were all rented with great tenants for 1200, 1300 bucks a month. And then, I pretty much financed it 100% because there was equity in the deal where I was able to refinance it, a year or two into it, get my money back. And I did make the mistake of selling most of those off. Now I kept a bunch of them, but I do think about that sometimes when I'm driving down the street. I used to own that house. It'd be worth, $400,000 today. But the majority of the portfolio I've kept.
Good for you. Good for you. You're smarter than me. That's yeah. You wish you can't. I mean, hindsight's always 2020, or at least somewhat. Sometimes it's 2020, I think I should say. But and that's just business. You take the wins when you get them, and you think you're winning, and you are, and you move on.
Yeah,
You can't
sure.
always second guess it, but it is also interesting just to see how the strategy, if I could go back, how you would have changed that. But I digress and kind of getting off track here, because we want to talk about your lending business that you've built from 2018 until now. You guys focus on, well, you tell me, like, what's your core business look like in the lending business now?
So the core business is that we're bridge lenders. We provide, funding capital to acquire, construct, and refinance single, one to four family properties is our core business. When I started it in 2018, it was heavy on the bridge side. There's a lot of fix and flip going on up until more recently, because the state of the real estate market, it's kind of frozen is how I describe it, in single family and in commercial. We're doing a lot of 30-year rental loans for people who, are trying to get, flip their bridge loan into a perm. That market's really been healthy, or people who own properties free and clear or with a little debt on them, and the capital markets are pretty dislocated at the moment, and they're looking for money, either for working capital or to acquire more if they have equity in their property. 30-year rental loans are a great way to go.
So tell me about, I guess, in the first part of your statement there, why did you focus on the one to four family? What was the opportunity there that you saw in that versus other potential assets to lend on?
Well, I started there because that's what I just knew, and I built and renovated a bunch of stuff. I mean, it's kind of like where a lot of people start, right? The single family market, single family home market is more stable and has a longer track record of providing year over year growth compared to other asset types. As I mentioned, I'm familiar with retail development, and you see what's happening in the office space right now. People need a place to live. Look, multifamily is getting a little skittish because that could be a little overheated. The single family market is definitely the most stable, and I thought to myself, lending is a risk mitigation business. That's really what it is. What asset class do I go after to make the safest risk-adjusted return for me and my investors?
Got it. No, I love that. And now you've really switched, it sounds like, to, you said, the 30-year rental loan. How do you capitalize that and then get your money back? Are you selling those notes off? How does that work?
We don't have the capital structure to hold 30-year paper.
Right.
So it's all originated, used off warehouse lines and partnerships with capital providers. And it all goes to, you know, investors who have an appetite for that long term.
Right. That's interesting. So tell me how does that process work? Like, what's the turnover time from, okay, maybe you guys have investors and I'm speculating here. So tell me if I'm wrong. You guys have investors give you money. You guys then go out and you close this 30-year, you fund this 30-year loan, but then you take that and then sell that off. Is that about the?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's all about, so the loans can be originated within 21 days. That's our average turn time. And it's a turn business, and it's really a fee business is what it is. We're providing a service to match, you know, our customers, our borrowers with the appropriate capital source. So, you know, we charge origination fees. There's some processing things that go into it, things like that.
Sure. No, completely understand that. What was I going to ask you about that? So I'm losing my train of thought here. Let's see. It was on the buyer side of things. Now I was looking at that. It's a fee-based business, but what's your typical turn? That was a question. What's your typical turn time from the day they close?
Sell.
Yeah, until you sell,
An asset within 1 or 2 weeks.
Okay.
It's quick. Yeah, I don't hold it on the warehouse line for very long.
Right. Okay, I gotcha. And then how do you match that up? I mean, are you selling these to private equity? Is there just a pool of buyers that you just put it out to and say, hey, I got this loan available? Or how do you effectively sell those at scale is the question.
So this is a new product that we're working on, and I actually have not yet skin the cat, so to speak, on selling them at scale. We're piecemealing them off one by ones and small packages and things like that. But that's, you know, the next thing that we're gonna be working on.
Got it.
And you know, we need scale for the securitization market. That's where all this stuff is going.
Right.
So it's gonna be, you know, anywhere from $50 to $100 million at a clip. And again, as I told you before, we're not there yet on the 30-year. We focus a lot on the bridge and the fix and flip space, which is an entirely different loan type. Right. And we hold most of that on our balance sheet. But it will be an interesting journey on how to efficiently execute on the aggregation and sale of those loan assets. And, you know, the way I look at it, I'm going to approach it, you know, how I have built all the other parts of my business. And, you know, we're going to take a clean sheet approach to it, and I'm going to hire the best people and, you know, connect with the best people in the industry, and we're going to figure it out.
Right. No, I like that. You know, and that was my next question was your fix and flip loans, things like that. I would imagine that those are, like you said, they're things you hold on the balance sheet. Is that simply just because the returns on those? I mean, those are interest bearing loans that add a number that probably makes sense.
It's mostly because of duration. I mean, they're short duration. You know, average is a little under 12 months. Mm. And you have to think about, well, the capital that we have to lend doesn't have the time horizon for 30 years, first and foremost, like I mentioned before. The other aspect is that, you know, duration is expressed in time, but it's really a measure of risk as a result of interest rate changes.
Yeah.
So last year was a great example. Our entire portfolio for a period of time, for a couple months, was like not making any money because our cost of capital was rising and our interest rates were fixed on our bridge loans. I mean, the whole industry, you know, got hit pretty hard by that because how fast the rates rose. Mm-hmm. But because of short duration, it didn't affect the asset value of that loan. And we were able to just run them off and then originate new loans at a higher rate at market.
Right. That makes sense. And would you say, because your capital is, like you said, warehouse lines and things like that, do you take, and it's probably a floating rate that just adjusts all the time. Do you bring in private, Do you raise money from private investors at fixed rates, or is that just an entirely different side of the business or different strategy altogether?
Yeah, no, we have the investors that plug in the equity capital required for the warehouse lines, and they're paid just a fixed rate of return based off the income that comes off the fund.
Got it.
And then the warehouse line fluctuates based off of SOFR or Prime.
Right. Got it. Okay. That's a pretty complicated series of things that have to happen, because you're and again, I'm just getting my head wrapped mm-hmm. around the way this works, is that you have lenders that get a fixed rate of return who basically collateralizing the warehouse line. Is that a fair mm-hmm. way of saying
it's,
that?
It's exactly the way to say it. Yep.
Right. Okay. And then you're borrowing off of that warehouse line. So you, yeah, it's that, that is.
And that's why the short duration is important, because right. imagine if we're taking long dated risk on a short, that's a recipe for a disaster. Absolutely. And that's effectively what, like, you know, the SVB banking crisis was. You know, their deposits and everything are short term, their capital is short term, they're borrowing short term, and they were buying long term instruments
right.
that they couldn't weather that storm, and had to mark it down to market.
Like selling options, you would at that point have unlimited risk, you know, as
exactly.
yeah, so it's
yeah,
you can collect the premium, but then you have unlimited risk as the interest rate rises. So it's like you got to offset that somehow, and the way you do that is by, you know, compressed duration.
Exactly. That's right.
That's cool. I love that. Very, very cool. So we've talked a little bit about your private lending business. Actually, I have a couple of questions here before we kind of shift gears and talk really about the business side of your business. But where do you see risk right now in the space that you're in? And I know we talked a little bit about this, you know, compressed or shorter durations mm-hmm. is a way you offset some of that risk. But what are some other things, I guess, market sentiment, and then where do you see risk, and how are you guys offsetting that?
So, it's really a function of, you know, credit, the borrower's credit, and loan to value mm. on the collateral. And, you know, I was having a conversation with a colleague of mine in the industry, and all he wanted to talk about was, well, what, you know, what's the V in that LTV? What's the value of the asset? What's the value of the collateral? And that's, you know, nice to look at an appraisal and say, you know, yeah, this house is worth $400,000. But if there's not many transactions, you have to resort to cash flow. You know, what's the borrower look like? What's their experience in their ability to execute? And what type of cash flow can the property throw off, even if it's not designed to, even if their plan is to sell it as a flip? You got to look at the rental income, because that will be able to ride you through a rough patch. Whereas value, you know, who knows what values are today right. in reality.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Very cool. One other point I wanted to make here is that you guys have just gone to a national lending lender.
Yeah, we're now national lenders. We're able to lend across the country, opposed to just stay here local in Philadelphia.
Got it. Well, let's talk about that, because that requires team. That requires building a business. That requires you as the leader to, you know, get out there and organize all your people in the right way. So what have been some things, I guess, on the leadership side and scaling your business that have been kind of some important lessons that you've learned over the last few years?
Sure. So I think the first thing, looking back at some of the mistakes I've made, is that before you scale a business, you really have to define what you're doing, why you're doing it, what are your values, what's the culture that you want to create. And because everyone does create a culture, they just might not know what the heck they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then if they grow and grow and grow, one day they look around themselves and they're like, I don't like what this guy's doing, or how this guy's behaving, or how we are collectively, right. you know, attacking this. So, you know, I went through for a few years, it took me a few years to really figure that out. And I went through an exhaustive process to define, you know, my objectives from a leadership standpoint. And then the next challenge is, you know, you have to communicate it. You know, what are our values? Again, what's our mission? Our mission, you know, is that we provide capital to real estate investors so they can accomplish their goals. And I've seen it across the board. Some of our clients are just looking to build up a portfolio to create wealth for generational wealth. Some of our clients are looking to improve neighborhoods. They, you know, they grew up in an area, they don't like the direction it's going into. And so once you really, you know, they don't like it, the direction that it's going into. So that's why they're motivated to do what they do. Mm. So when you're able to connect those points together, then you have a purpose behind that. Right. And that's really, I think, where, like, you know, where the special sauce is.
Yeah, no, that's very, very cool. And it sounds like you would like to align yourselves with borrowers that have kind of a mission and purpose behind what they're doing that kind of aligns with what your mission and purpose is.
Correct. Correct. I, the word alignment, you know, is key. Like, you know, going back to after when I left Preet, you know, I built all those properties, and some of them, you know, with a series of different partners. I was looking for partners. I love the action. I'm a deal junkie by trade, by nature. And, you know, you get into a partnership with somebody and they're your friend, or they do something that you do. And then you realize, well, it doesn't really complement what I do, and our interests really are not aligned. So alignment of interest between internal stakeholders and external stakeholders is really important to me.
Yeah.
And being able to identify that is key.
Right. That's fantastic. What's it been like scaling across the country? I mean, that requires that communication really just to increase exponentially, I would think. How would you accomplish that?
So it's remote work and hybrid work has really, you know, that shift has really changed the landscape. I used to have a mentality of that you have to have people boots on the ground in the neighborhoods across the country to get that going. And, you know, a couple years ago, a colleague of mine pretty much, you know, opened my eyes up to the fact that there's so much data out there. And, you know, and he was in Baltimore, Maryland. And I could tell you what's going on the property in North Philadelphia that you're lending on. I know it just as well as you do. And I'm sitting here in Baltimore. So, you know, most of the national stuff is done totally remotely. And we spend a lot of time. I spend a lot of time with my sales director, for example, making sure that he's managing the sales staff. And he's so diligent with communication when you're managing remotely. Yeah. You have to essentially keep it, act like you're in the office together, but not.
Right.
And it's not intuitive for a lot of people, but if you're diligent with that, the results can be great. You know, in terms of, you know, because we have sales guys in Florida that are doing deals up here. Mm. You know, they just, you know, all the borrowers have the same objective. Like, you know, we know what they want. They can be anywhere.
Right. Right. Oh, that's cool. Absolutely love it. Michael, I regret that we are out of time because there's a lot of questions here on the leadership, team building, scaling side of things. I feel like you've got a front row seat to growing something. I think you get some of the people, and they're always excellent guests, but on the show, you know, that are looking back 40 years ago and going, man, this is what it took to grow. But I feel like you are kind of in the middle of it. And so I think there's a lot of lessons that we can really learn from you. Thank you for taking the time to really break down your business, the private lending business, how you guys are offsetting risk, the products you guys see that customers want right now, and how you guys are aligning yourselves with your borrowers on what your company core values are and what they're accomplishing as well. So I think this is a really cool space. I absolutely love it. Thank you for taking the time to come on today. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, your firm, and learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
The best way is www.bluebirdlending.com. There's a contact us and an apply now page, and that will go straight to our sales team. And we'd love to talk to whoever is interested in working on the next project.
Fantastic. Bluebird Lending, Bluebird Lending, if I could speak today, .com, bluebirdlending.com. Make sure we include that there in the show notes. Michael, thank you again for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us,
That would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.